Been feeling a little under the weather the last couple of days. So if the talk is a little shorter and the energy is a little less than it, just want y'all to know that. But I'm happy to be here, and I'm really glad that each and every one of you. This is our third week of Everyday Verses and Vows. We talked about the road verse first week. Last week we worked with a verse about mountains, the ocean, and the sky. And this week we're going to talk about the five thoughts, or sometimes called the five contemplations. This is a part of our formal meal verse, which is long and has several pieces to it. And it's also the single verse that we use, before meals in more informal situations. So I'd love to start by just chanting that together. If you don't know it, I believe it's on page 54 of the chant book. I think that's the new page number. If someone would say nod and say yes, and that feels good. Okay, perfect. Perfect. So we reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. We reflect on our virtue and practice and whether we are worthy of this offering. We regard it as essential to keep the mind free from excesses such as greed. We regard this food as good medicine to sustain our lives. For the sake of enlightenment, we now receive this food. Thank you. This in Zen, we have lots of forms around receiving food. We recognize ancestors. We lay our bowls out when we're doing orioke. We eat in silence. We clean our bowls and we return them back to the state that they started in. Eating food is a fundamental human activity. So, of course, Zen would have something to say about it. In the instructions for the cook, Dogen writes, "Simple vegetables can nurture the wombs of sages." He also wrote in The Dharma for Taking Food, he wrote this fanciful essay. It's really a long set of instructions, and it's still the same instructions that we use for orioke, kind of the formal method that we use for meals. The verses that we chant, including the one we just did, came from Dharma for Taking Food. So tonight, what I thought is that we'd maybe explore each one of those thoughts just a little bit, and probably use a similar format to what we've done the last couple of weeks. I want to share some thoughts on the five thoughts, and maybe we'll talk a little bit amongst ourselves and share what came up for all of you. So the first line, we reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. There's an awful lot. It's even in that first line. If you consider the history of Buddhism, monks in India would go out in the morning after meditation and they would beg for alms, beg for food. The belief at that time was that the act of farming was also a form of killing. And so this was against the monastic code, against the Vinaya. So monks actually had to ask for food. When in China, monasteries were formed and they actually picked up farming practices to feed the Sangha, they created more institutions really to support much larger groups of monks. But it's very interesting that in the monastic settings, one of the forms that was kept were that monks were always served food. There was something about that, that this is really supposed to reflect that same principle that monks only eat what is provided from others, and that monks were supposed to eat whatever came into their bowls. So I think that's a little bit like, the way we do orioke today. We still very largely are served, and we kind of accept whatever it is that's served that day. In Japanese, the verb that they use kind of throughout the first couple of lines is the word haraku. which means to measure. So we measure the effort that brought us this food. So maybe at first what we're doing is doing something where we're measuring the efforts. It's almost like we're kind of adding up all of the different ways that all the work that was done to bring us that food. The Kenzo, the volunteers in the kitchen usually helping, those who work in the garden often, a lot of our meals come from things that are brought from the garden. But then there's grocery stores and there's drivers and there's farmers and, you know, it's as far as we can kind of see it, as far as we can actually see it. I think that's the first part of that verse. The second part, and when it says, and consider how it comes to us, I think it's a different kind of measuring. I think we're kind of being asked to consider all the immeasurable ways in which food comes to us. You know, what can we really know about the sunlight and the rain and the soil and the moonlight and the fog and the dew, the bacteria that helps the plants draw in resources, the bacteria that breaks down plants and becomes food for others, including us. The Plum Village translation reads, "This gift is the gift of the whole universe, the earth, the sky, numerous living beings, and much hard and loving work." That's their translation of the first line. So this opening line asks us to look out into the external world and I think see the beauty in the specific and in the infinitely unseen ways that that sustenance finds its way to us. The second line, and actually in the original Japanese, it's one, they say first, blah, 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 second, blah, 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 blah. So second, we reflect on our virtue and practice and whether we are worthy of this offering. Again, we're asked to kind of measure here again, but rather than looking at the external world, this reflection is they're asking us to look inward, reflect on our virtue and practice. First, we can consider kind of the perfection of already being enlightened. That's kind of one of the core beliefs of Mahayana. That's, I think, the virtue part of that phrase. And then today, like right now, how are we enacting that awakened nature? That's the practice part. Virtue and practice are actually translated from a single Japanese word. It's inkutsu. And again, I just sometimes think the Japanese do it better than we do. They come up with these words that mean both at the same time. They mean practice and virtue at the same time. That this word, the zenkutsu, means to hold together both the completeness and what lacks, and to do that at the same time, kind of hold that non-duality. And in that opening line, what we're doing is we're holding on to the non-duality of the external world, right? And at the start of the second line, what we do is the same, we're doing it with our internal experience, our virtue and our practice. Now, the second part, I think, and maybe it's just me, but whether we are worthy of this offering sometimes can be a little triggering for me, whether we're worthy of it. I know that worthiness or self-worthiness, I think, has a certain emotional charge to it in the 21st century Western culture. And it's sometimes interesting to read modern teachers with an Eastern cultural upbringing having commented on that Westerners have a particular challenge with self-worth, that we have a challenge building practices where we're compassionate to ourselves. And so, you know, whether we're worthy of this offering might kind of bring up some difficult thoughts. So I'll offer maybe a couple of other interpretations, a couple of other translations. Again, these are my versions. But examining my ease and my suffering, I meet the opportunity for this offering. I meet the opportunity for this offering, for the food that's been put in front of me. another version might be, what can I do here and now with this gift that I've been given? The children translates the second line as such. I contemplate my own practice, constantly trying to improve. The third, we regard it as essential to keep the mind free from excesses such as greed. And here, there's an activity now. We've kind of moved from contemplation and reflection to an activity. We're protecting the mind, we're guarding the mind, we're keeping the mind free from. In our translation, it's we're keeping our mind free from excesses such as greed, but I don't think that leaves out the other poisons. I don't think it leaves out the other things that we need to be aware of. We need to protect the mind from not just greed, but hate, delusion, that those are just as essential. I like this passage from Shihaku Okamura where he writes, during a single meal, it's possible to transmigrate through all six realms of samsara. When I have to eat something I dislike, I feel like a hell dweller. When I'm hungry, I feel like a hungry ghost. Sometimes when I eat and I become sleepy, I'm like an animal. Sometimes I'm angry as an asura, as a fighting spirit with the person who cooked the food. Sometimes when I eat fine food, I feel like a heavenly being. These likes and dislikes and transmigration within my mind are caused by ignorance. The taste of food exists only while the food is in my mouth. After I swallow it, whether I love it or I hate it, it's all the same. It's all nutrition that sustains our body and mind in practice. Certainly not during Ariyoga. Moment to moment, we're accepting the offering of the food and that it gives us so many opportunities to practice. We regard this food as good medicine to sustain our lives. This line is specifically about our bodies. Food is just medicine, beneficial medicine, good medicine. It should keep us healthy. It should prevent disease. It should alleviate exhaustion. The Sotoshu translation of this line is, we use this food properly as good medicine. Keep our bodies from withering away. Theravadan tradition, their meal verse is kind of all captured within this phrase. There it goes, wisely reflecting, I use alms food not for fun, not for pleasure, not for fattening, not for beautification, but only for the maintenance and the nourishment of this body, for keeping it healthy, for helping with the holy life. Thinking thus, I will allay hunger without overeating, so that I may continue to live blamelessly and at ease. There's a thread of this from the Buddha's life, for those of you who are familiar. The Buddha started his life as a prince living in a palace full of indulgences. There was really nothing that wasn't available to him. And then he left and he spent 6 years as an ascetic, engaging in austere practices, in what he believed was an effort to quench craving and desire. In the sutras, he describes himself as having lived on a single juniper berry, and then a single grain of rice, and then he started completely fasting. On the verge of starvation, he put down the ascetic practices and accepted an offering of milk porridge from someone in the village nearby. And from there, he sits down under the Bodhi tree to thoroughly examine the path between the indulgent and the austere, between the attachment and aversion. So what does it mean to take food without all the extra things for just what it is that we need? And the last line, the fifth. For the sake of enlightenment, we now receive this food. So for the sake of accomplishing the Buddha's way, for realizing the path, for attaining the way, for nourishing our aspirations to serve all beings, we now receive the food. Everything else is us preparing for that meal. But in this last one, for the sake of this, for the sake of this practice that is also important to us, now we will receive this. I really like the five thoughts. So it's short tonight. I'd love for you to get together in maybe groups of two or three and just kind of talk about what sort of came up for you, and then maybe we'll share a little bit.
I think that's
You have all had to share about the five thoughts.
I can bring a just around.
Thank you. One of the things that we were talking about is the fourth, so food as medicine, and some of the commentary that you spoke about like food's not fun, or whatever other words that you were using, and just pausing to appreciate like how important things like connection and like really feeling the appreciation of where this food came from, and like that feels like a little bit confounding in some ways, like.
This is not for you. Like that one, the Theravadin verse sounds like this. Not for beautification. It's not for this. It's not for that. Right?
I think specifically like the enjoyment aspect was what we were talking about.
Can't be sure as we can't be sure who's enjoying the food. Yeah.
I'm Ginkgo. Our group talked a lot about the same kinds of stuff, but there's a social nourishment that comes with sharing food, with preparing food, giving and receiving. But we do have that line elsewhere in the meal verses about the giver, the receiver, and the gift, mm-hmm. and how those are all sort of the same thing. I wanted to share, this is not, we didn't talk about this because we were busy talking about this other stuff, but one of the things I wanted to share about the whether we are worthy of this offering, I had an experience where at a retreat at a sashim where I was like really working with feeling terribly unworthy and just in despair and all of that stuff. And I was crying a lot and all of that. And we did this 5 thoughts. And I realized that sometimes when I stop eating, it's because I'm not feeling like I'm worth any of the food. Like I'm not worth taking food. I'm not worth, you know, breathing air. I mean, you know, it can get bad. So I was kind of borderline there, but I was trying to do sort of half rations. I'll put myself on half rations in a situation like that so that I'm at least taking some food. And so I was doing that, and at some point I ran across this line and I thought, well, I know that I'm not worthy, but something is worthy. There is something here that is worth receiving and accepting this food. Didn't know what it was, couldn't tell you now what it was exactly, unless it's just life itself, and affirming that. So there's a way that, there's a lot of different ways to look at this, whether we are worthy of this offer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about it in our group, the subject of wrongness and whether one person said whether they were worthy of the offering. What I thought and shared was about the precepts. And when I read the meal chant, like I did tonight, I thought about the precepts, especially the one about greed. So it's always a reminder for me to honor the precepts, and the meal chant helps me to remember them.
This is Riju. So I say this first 3 times a day most days. And I have never felt more reactive to guilt than tonight. Like usually I very much like them and feel comforted by them. But I don't know, a lot came up there. And there's various contexts for that. Part of it I think is as Tenzo, I just really want people to feel like they can have the food they want, to be nourished and sustained and fulfilled, and that they can take pleasure from it, because pleasure itself isn't a problem, it's good. And that they can like have what they need without worrying. So yeah, that it was a really like, ooh, ah, kind of experience. Except for the first one, which always feels really nourishing to me.
Hi, it's Sonia. Yeah, this is one of the like just great moments of my day every day. And I'm loving this class because it's really helping me remember just like where I get nourishment every day. Just saying this 3 times a day is just a chance to drop in and reflect on all of these things. There's so much here. I was sharing with my group that I understand how the worthiness thing could be triggering for some people. And for me, I love it because I know how supported I am by this place, and it's just a little check-in for myself. Like, am I showing up today the way that I want to show up? It's not an externally enforced pressure. It's my own sense of gratitude manifesting in kind of what I'm doing with the energy from this food. And what I really like is the explicitness of the last thing. There aren't that many places in Soto Zen where we really talk about like waking up or enlightenment. We're a little bit softer about it. And this just takes us right there, that what we're doing right now and eating this food is no different than the zazen or some of the more sacred things that we do in practice. It's all right here. So I really appreciate this first. Thanks for choosing it.
Hi, this is Christine. I just wanted to add that I think that the lifting of the plate and the offering of the food is really an important component of this for me. It moves it to more of a gracious, humble kind of acceptance of it. And that adding that embodied kind of movement and then kind of giving it or lifting it is a really important part.
Hi, I'm Lulu, and hearing everyone talk about the worthiness made me think of something that I kind of realized a little while ago when I was trying to learn mindful eating and eating in moderation. You know, I was repeating the Plum Village tradition versus before I eat. And at one point I started thinking about how does the food feel about me eating it? And so it kind of stopped being like, am I worthy to eat this food? But does this food deserve to be eaten out of mindlessness or greed or self-hatred? Or does this food deserve to be neglected out of, I don't know, the same things? And it was just really, really funny and silly and kind of hard to explain to other people who don't practice Buddhism, but I think some people will understand where I'm coming from. Thank you.
We also talked a little bit about we're talking about and we're designing a little bit and our different reactions to it. One of the things that, of course, are reflecting on together, those first two lines feel really like interpenetrating. Like we're reflecting on the effort that process through how it comes to us. And like for me, when we're focusing on virtue and practice, it's basically like remembering, like, am I going to be consciously making an effort to be a part of that web, part of that, like, am I going to take this food and that energy and nourishment and bring that forward into the next moment that meets me and the next and the next? Because part of my efforts in the future are like going to be a part of how meals come to other folks or come to future me, I suppose. So just remembering that all of our efforts are connected together.
My name is Lynn. We didn't talk about this at all, but one of the things I'd like to share is the first line where reflecting on where that brought this food to us or how it comes to me really speaks to me. I think you spoke to that a little bit too, Thomas, about that feeling. But before I came here tonight, I was watching a video and it was about food. But it was about different products that are really popular, and one of them was this thing called acai, and it was telling the story of where this food comes from and how it gets to me. And I found it really hard to watch because it was information that I made me sad about the implications that me taking this food had on these people that I've never met, never seen. That I have an effect on. And I think in my own life, I could do a much better job of knowing where my food comes from or where does that meat come from and should I even be eating it? I feel about it. Who am I affecting? So I think that that's a really powerful verse. So thank you for reading it.
I had this last piece that I couldn't figure out any place else to fit it in, but it connects to some things that you said, and it really connects to that line, that first line of we reflect on the effort that brought us this food and consider how it comes to us. And this isn't so much about food, but it's a short piece about cooking. And so I think about the efforts that brought us this food. So this is from the Tathahara Cookbook. This is from Edward S.B. Brown. I want you to know that cooking is not just working on food, but working on yourself and working on other people. It's working on how you work. Cooking as self-transformation rather than a magical process that appears on some TV show. The real magic is that you can grow kind, generous, and larger-hearted in the process of preparing food. Because you give your heart to the activity, you're realizing yourself by realizing food. That description recognizes the efforts that can be easily seen, and not just the work, but the opportunity to practice and transformation. You might think of the effort that brought us this food, but maybe there's other efforts within that food that come to us at the same time. It's still really nice to me.